We come to study number 17 on Christian ethics. So this evening we come to drug taking. But the passage we have just read, 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 3 to verse 7, shows to us a few things, and we want to note three important things from that passage. Firstly, we must be people of genuine faith. There are those who proclaim themselves to be Christians when in fact they do not have true faith in themselves. And we can tell often because of their values, of their way of life. The Bible gives us different marks by which we can determine whether a person has genuine faith or not. So 1 John gives us three very clear marks of the Christian. First, there is the doctrinal mark. A true Christian will believe certain truths about the Bible. If you fail to believe the Bible's teaching on God, for example, or on the Lord Jesus Christ, or on the way of salvation, then we can't regard you as a true Christian. So there are some basic uncompromised truth, truth that cannot be negotiated. Then there is also the moral mark. The doctrinal mark is followed by the moral mark. The moral mark shows that a person behaves in a certain way in accordance to the teaching of Scripture. When he knows what is right from the teaching of Scripture, he would do it. When he knows what is wrong, he would avoid doing it. So the person has a changed life, a change to closer conformity to the Bible's teaching. Then of course there is the third mark, which is the social mark. A true believer will love other true believers. They would avoid false believers. They would avoid worldly people who claim themselves to be Christians. So although we have good friends among non-believers, outright non-believers, they can be good friends, but our final company would be the people of God. So we would naturally gravitate towards the church and to God's people. We want to be with God's people because we have the same faith, we speak the same language, you see. So we have the same Lord, we have the same spiritual life in us. So true believers would show at least these three marks. And of course, there are other marks such as prayer. A person who is a true believer will naturally pray and call out to God, Father. He will not just utter prayers from being taught, see. So no, instead he really prays from his heart and so on. So here in 2 Timothy chapter 1, we learn that there must be genuine faith to begin with. Otherwise, you don't talk about ethics. You can't tell a person to be ethical. Their ethics is based on other beliefs, other principles. Then secondly, from this passage, we learn that there have been gifts given to us. Just as Timothy had the special gift of ministry, so we have gifts of various kinds that are meant to edify the church, to serve the Lord. So those gifts must be stirred up. They are there, but they need to be improved upon. So you can't let the gifts lie dormant. You must exercise those gifts and use them for the purpose of building up the Church of Jesus Christ. Then thirdly, we take note that the three faculties of the personality are to be in good health. The apostle here says in verse 7, we are not given a spirit of fear, but of what? Of power, of love, and of a sound mind. Power, or dunamis in Greek, refers to action. So power is given within us. The Holy Spirit in us makes us want to obey God's word and to do what is right. So that has to do with the will. Then of love. Love concerns the feelings. Yeah. So we love God and we love His people. We love His cause. We love His church. Therefore, love is in us. So we love the truth and therefore we will act. So there must be that love in us to want to act on the truth. Then of course there is of a sound mind. So before there's love in the heart. Love what? Love the things that we know. So the mind receives the truth. So in that order, in reverse order, the mind is of primary importance. It receives truth, and then the truth must move our heart. Yeah? Then our heart mind is moved, we will act, the will will go into action. Those three faculties interact with one another, producing a feeling of being good or feeling bad, you see. So that has been called the conscience. The Bible talks about the conscience. People define it differently, but one way of defining it is that it is the effect of the interactions between these three basic faculties of the human personality. Human person is body and soul. United together, we are a living person. Each living person has a personality. Yeah? So that personality consists of three basic faculties of mind, heart and will. When they interact with one another, they produce an effect felt by us called the conscience. So when your mind knows what is true, you act contrary to the truth, you have not a nice feeling. You feel condemned, you feel lousy. See? And similarly, if you know the truth and you are convinced of the truth, you don't act according to the truth, again you feel lousy. See? But if you know the truth, you are convinced of the truth and you act according to the truth, then you feel good. So the conscience is the interaction of the three faculties of the human personality. Now, I begin with this background passage to show to us that drug taking has to be considered from various passages of scripture, including this one. So we have to read a background passage. It is our practice to always begin a study by looking at reading a background passage. That is the relevance. Now, insofar as drug taking is concerned, most Christians would avoid addiction to drugs. They take drugs only when needed, such as medicine. Say, cough mixture is a type of drug. So when you have a cough, you take, but that's a medicine. But the medicine, when abused, can lead to addiction. And there are drugs especially so for people who are addicted, to get people addicted and also to feed those who are already addicted. So that's why drug addicts sometimes look for certain type of cough mixtures. Some of them have been banned in this country because it's known that when you take in sufficient quantity, it fulfills your need to have a high because you don't have the drugs that you wanted. So you find a substitute in this medicine. So we know that we want to avoid addiction. No one wants to get addicted because of the many adverse effects of drug addiction. So to most Christians, therefore, we know the harm caused by drug addiction, and to us it is no big deal, so we avoid drug addiction. So it is not too much of an ethical issue with us. But in recent days, this is coming to the fore. It is making itself known to us. It wants our attention. Because just like the LGBT issue and the abortion, you know what is LGBT, don't you? The lesbian, gay, bisexual, transvestite issue. Yeah? So in the past, they were low-key in the background. We know they are around. These people are around. But they wouldn't be so vocal like today. But today, they join together, they become a movement, and then they fight for their rights. And then they have, you know, they hijack the rainbow colors and the flag. Their symbol is a flag with the rainbow colors. And so you see our umbrellas also rainbow color. So if you're not careful, people say, hey, you know, you belong to a certain club or what, you see. So it's such a pity that what is innocent, like the color of the light spectrum becomes taken away, the rainbow color becomes taken away, hijacked by the LGBT movement, see? So they make themselves known, they pressure for their rights, so we are forced to make a decision from the Christian perspective. What do we do about the LGBT? Do we support them, or we are against them, or how do we help them, see? Then similarly, abortion, see? Abortion is forced upon us. People are fighting for it to be legalized. And therefore, we have to have a clear view on this. Then it becomes an ethical issue to us. Say, then today, drug addiction is people are pressuring for certain drugs to be legitimized and to be legalized. to make it legitimate for people to use, then laws has to be passed to legalize it. And so this is already on, the pressure is on, and often it is put in the guise of therapy. Say some people they just need it, you say. Just like when you are sick, you need certain things, but certain people, they are sick more often than you are, see, and they need certain drugs to help them get through the day. So they are claiming that they are not advocating the extreme use of drugs, but they just need to keep themselves, you know, able to function. Yeah? It's just their body makeup. And then they begin to come up with a term, recreational drug use, see. So they put it in a very nice way, see. So from the coining of expressions like this, it sounds innocent, it sounds more acceptable to people. So the pressure is on for various governments to pass laws to legitimize certain drugs. And slowly, you know, they are succeeding in some countries because the door is slightly opening now. What used to be drugs that can be only obtained by prescription from a doctor and in limited amounts, now people can buy over the counter and for so-called recreational use of the drug, you see. So we must be careful, we must be careful. So here we want to be clear. So as the pressure mounts, what should the Christian stand be? So it becomes an ethical issue already. Eh? So historically in the West, drug addiction problem was associated with the rise of the hippies in the 1960s. Hippies were just mostly young people, including some older ones, but mostly young people. They kept long hair, beard and moustache. They dressed shabbily. They lived in communes. You see? Then they were associated with drug taking, getting high over drugs. Yeah. Then they had so-called the Woodstock Festival. They gather together, they play their pop music, and they come up with a certain brand of style of pop music. And so generally pop music had been influenced by worldly ideas. Say, bang, 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 here and there, and then the lyrics also, see. And you see, in recent days, some people were unwittingly singing, without realizing this, they were singing "Hey Jude," you know, the Beatles song. See, then our overseas speaker was quite upset and went up to admonish the two persons who go and sing there. See, so with the street singer, you know. So our overseas speaker went up to them, say, you know, you're pastors, you shouldn't be standing in the street singing. And then the other thing is, you don't know the meaning of the song. You see, that song is actually propagating the drug culture, you know, you don't understand what's being sung. So generally, that type of rock, hard rock and pop music, that comes from that type of culture, that type of background, okay? Then what about the East? The East also has its own problem about drugs. What happened is that the British East India Company, which was based in India, tried to expand their influence elsewhere, and as countries were conquered, and then China was a big country, and in the name of trade, they introduced opium there, and there was supposed to be limited trade treaty, and then they tried to bring in opium, but along the way, because it's such a lucrative trade, you see, so packages of bundles after bundles of opium was transported by ship from India to China, and then smuggling began to take place, and then the locals began to make big money by having syndicates, you see. So all the triads and gangsters were involved, you see. Then some corrupt politicians would be involved protecting these underground elements. Then the two worlds, the world of light and the world of darkness, will always be in conflict, you see. The righteous police officer would try to keep to the law, and then the rook police officer would be in cohort with the underground people who were smuggling drugs, and then they would appeal to the politicians, the righteous politicians who try to do right, but the corrupt politician will be quietly supporting or covering up for these underground activities of smuggling drugs. So a lot of things happen, and the coastal cities of China, the men especially, all so many of them got addicted, and when they got addicted to opium, they wanted more, see? And what began as a means of earning money, easy money for the British, it resulted in the Chinese society being weakened and destroyed. So China not only was politically weak, it was corrupt from within, but the long culture of China was unable to withstand the modern onslaught of these people with guns and battleship. They come, you know, using their battleship will be at a coast, you know, they would just fire a cannon, and people see the power of the gun power from the battleship. Those they were frightened. So unequal treaties were made, and there were two opium wars fought. China had to fight to the British, say, but the British, you know, by crooked ways, sad to say, you know, by crooked ways they subdued the Chinese and made them sign treaties. So that was why many parts of the coastal areas of China were conceded to Western powers, first to the British, then to the Germans, and to the French, and then to the Americans. See? The Americans joined in also. See? So for example, in the north, there near to the Korean Peninsula is the Shantung province. The Shantung province, the Qingdao area, all those were under the German. See? Today, if you go to Qingdao, you discover that the city, the old buildings were all German design. You go to Shanghai was carved up. One big area belonged to the British, another to the French and Americans. You see? Then, of course, at that time also Portugal went to the Portuguese, and then Hong Kong went to the British. They signed this 99-year treaty to let the British rule. So all these unequal treaties were drawn up. So, because a treaty is a treaty, you have signed already, you have to keep to your word, you see. Otherwise, the international community will condemn you for not keeping to your word. But actually, from the ethical point of view, you know, you can't blame the Chinese who knows a bit of the history like this to feel very unhappy. You know, why were the Chinese bullied like that, you see? Now our own country is being, you know, colonized, and why must we sit certain part? Why must Hong Kong be given to the British for so long? And you say, so it has been like this. But of course, the Westerners, they came more for trade, and those who came were largely unconverted people. See? The few converted people tried to act righteously, but they were no match for the majority who were unscrupulous people, adventurers, business people, and politicians. So no ethics came into question among them. See? So that is the background. So we have relatives. Yeah, you ask around, see, in my generation, I still know of people, older generation, who were opium addicts. Yeah? And you know, a typical opium addict, the sallow face, you know, the sunken cheek, you know, and when they roll up their singlet, they used to wear that singlet, you see. They roll up, you see, all the paikot, you see, you know, typical opium addict look, you see, all the skinny look of the opium addict smoking a pipe, you see. So as he smokes, he feels happy there, smiling away, smoke, you see. But you deprive him of his opium, you see, he gets so sick, he's unable to function, he really throws a tantrum, he is very difficult to deal with. So when he's happy, so he doesn't work, see, because he has no energy, you know. He can't have the physical energy to work in a farm or to be act as a coolie or to run a business. His mind is just not there, his energy is gone. So we feel it in this part of the world as well. So the West has its problem, the East has its problem. But our concern tonight is to consider from the Christian point of view. So when the pressure comes, where do we stand on this matter? See? And how does it affect us and it might possibly affect us in our family life if we are not careful. Just last Sunday, a visitor, the relative had some, had this drug addiction problem. We were sitting down talking for some time, how best to go around helping. Just last Sunday, you know, see? So it's closer to us than you realize. Okay? So let us go through the first section, the types of drugs, to understand better what drug addiction is like. Okay? So consider first the types of drugs. Drugs may be classified under four categories, depending on the effect it has. So there are these four general categories. First, there are stimulants. So for example, cocaine is a stimulant. That, as we go down the list later on, you would know what the effects are physically. But from the name itself, stimulant, it stimulates you, it causes you to be agitated. Then depressants, example, alcohol. And alcohol addiction is another thing that we will consider next, God willing. But the point here is that alcohol has this effect of causing the person to be depressed, you know. And often when he's drunk, you see, he's angry, and then after that he begins to cry mommy even, you see. And the is a depressant. Then painkillers, like heroin, it has the effect of helping you in your pain. So in many situations used in controlled dosage, it helps in operation, in surgery and so on. But when abused, it's classified as a painkiller, but it has its effect on the person as well. Then fourthly, there are the hallucinogens. This, as from the name implies, it causes you to hallucinate. You begin to see things, see visions, see strange things. Yeah. So example is LSD, which we'll look at in a moment. So some drugs under controlled usage are used as medicine. All medicines are drugs, but not all drugs are medicines. So that is a general statement, okay? So of course you can find exception here and there. You can say, hey, that is more nutrition, but it's a medicine as well. But as a general rule, we say all medicines are drugs, but not all drugs are medicines. And when addicted, the addictive type of drugs, illegal, which are illegal often, they are referred to often as narcotics. So the word narcotics comes in. So in the police force, there are the CID people, the Criminal Investigation Department. There are the Commercial Crime Department. There are those who are in the Narcotics Department. So they deal mainly with drug smuggling. So this branch of the police officers will be gathering intelligence on who are the drug addicts and who are the pushers, and from the pushers they come to see who are the main men, you know, smuggling drugs in. So they observe for a long time, and then finally when they have sufficient evidence, they zoom in, arrest them red-handed, see, and then charge them in court, see. So there is a big task, you know. And just a few days ago, you read of a Malaysian man who was used as a drug mule, and in this case not innocently, not being tricked into it. Many drug mules are tricked into it. Drug mules are people who carry drugs across borders, across borders of countries. So just a few days ago, you read of how a Malaysian man had swallowed packs of drugs, and then Australian police managed to detect that there was drug in his body. So he was made to go and squat in the toilet and wait until one pellet after another came out, you see. And the Australian police issued quite a long statement saying that, you know, it's not stinking business for them, but it's sort of dangerous for others, and it's also dangerous for yourself. What if the drug packages get stuck in the person, the intestine can burst, say, and what if the drug breaks open and your system all absorb the drug, you will die also. Yeah. So the police issued a very strong statement there. See, you check up there just this past week, you know. So I don't know how many, something like what, 16 packages of drugs wrapped in plastic paper, all swallowed in and carried across the border. But the sharp immigration officers detected that, you see. So they probably have observed this person for some time. He might have been in and out for some time. And so they couldn't find anything on him when there was information that he was carrying drugs. So they searched his, and found it. Probably from their x-ray, they found how many 16 pellets inside his guts. Anyway, they all came out. So all in all, what we want to take note of is that the drugs, the illegal drugs, drugs are narcotics, it causes addiction. So drug addiction makes the people irrational, and it also affects the appetite and destroy health. A drug addict craves for more of the drug when the effects wear away. He is unable to function well at work, and he might turn to crime to get money to buy more drug. He's just unhappy, his body is just aching, he's uncontrollable, he just needs another shot, but he doesn't have the money to get the drugs. So the drug pusher might be waiting at the corner of the street and say, you have to give the money, otherwise you can't get your drug. So these people are desperate, and sometimes they go and rob, they go and steal in order to buy the drugs, see. So crime follows the drug addiction. So drug addiction causes family breakdowns, see, especially the man in the family, if he's an addict, well, terrible, see. And it causes so many social ills. For example, a son who is addicted, see. Then parents get so upset, and then the career of the son is affected, you see, he can't vote well, and so on. So the heartache costs, and you know, when you're related, you're closely related to the drug addict, you see, he's someone in your family, the heartache is painful, right? You see, in any situation where human relationship is involved, you can see that the pain. It's very hard to describe, but you, when you experience it, you know what it is like. Sintong, it's the pain in the heart. How do I explain it to people? You have to experience it to know it. Okay, so it's never a pleasant thing. It causes you so much upset. So much upset. Okay. Now, drugs can be taken in various forms. It can be swallowed. It can be inhaled. That means the, you know, smoke in. Or injected directly into the vein or the artery, see? And many of them are made from plants. Some are artificially made and synthesized, but many of the drugs sold in the black market are made from plants. So let us look at some of the main drugs so that we will be familiar with the names. We might not remember all the effects, but at least we are aware of the terrible effects of these different categories of drugs. We consider first heroin. It is used as a painkiller. It is sold as white tablets that are swallowed or in liquid form to be injected into a muscle or a vein. Occasionally, it is sniffed or smoked. Okay? The effect is an initial sense of pleasure followed by explosive excitement. Then a feeling of relaxation and eventually sleep. So put this together, you can see those who are addicted, they want this sensation. See, during the so-called experience, all fears and tensions are gone, and after a person has been on heroin for some time, there's no more pleasurable sensation. The pleasurable sensation goes. Most addicts have to have a fix every 4 hours to stay comfortable. Otherwise, they are just uncomfortable, so uncomfortable to them. Okay? Then, in cases of withdrawal means that you try to help the drug addict to stop taking drugs. So, in the process of trying to cure him, you see, he's unable to have drugs. So, if every 4 hours he needs a shot, he doesn't get it, you see. The withdrawal symptoms are seen. There are terrible effects. After 4 hours, a dreadful craving and sense of anxiety sets in. After 8 hours, there's sweating, running eyes, and running nose. And after 12 hours, dilated pupils. You know, it's frightening to see a man like that. You see, Then from 12 to 24 hours, fever sets in. From 24 to 36 hours, there might be danger to his life. So he has to be sent to hospital to be on life support, otherwise he will die. See? Then cannabis, in this part of the world, it is known as ganja. Yeah? So cannabis or ganja is made from a plant that grows to a height of 14 to 15 feet in hot, dry countries. Our country is hot and humid, but there are hot and dry countries in which the cannabis or ganja grow. The leaves are dried and chopped up, and when used in this form, it is called marijuana. Okay? Or the sticky brown resin is made into a brown cake, and it is called hashish. In Africa, this is very common drug. I remember many years ago, I don't know, 30, 40 years ago, as a student on an expedition to the Sahara Desert. Now I can tell stories because in the younger days you might think that this is boastfulness of some kind, but you know, we pass an age where we don't gain anything anymore. So those were the days, younger days, went on an expedition to the Sahara Desert, and along the way we passed Algeria, Morocco, and along the way in Algeria and Morocco, the street children just come run after our vehicle and say, hashish, hashish. Say, at first we wonder, what's that, hashish, hashish? Actually, they are saying, do you want hashish? You say, so they were just selling it on the street openly, you know. They chase after your vehicle as you drive slowly to the town, they come after you, hashish, hashish. Say, then you go to the villagers, you see, whenever you pass a village, the village youngsters run out and say, hashish, hashish. So it's something that is hard to forget. Imagine when you later come to realize what it is. That means so prevalent. See? And this hashish and this ganja or cannabis are usually made into hand-rolled cigarette or smoke in a pipe. See? So a pipe, you put the leaves there, smoke, say marijuana, or you roll the leaves. In this part of the world, we know that there are certain homemade cigarettes. From the palm of a tree, you cut the leaves, you see, and let the leaves dry. So you cut into length, then you roll the leaves, and in between you put tobacco, you see. So you say homemade, so you smoke. So in a similar way, the leaves of the ganja is rolled, the dried leaves are rolled up, you see, and then you just burn at one end, you smoke, you see. So this is how it is done. And usually it is done like that, but sometimes smoke in the pipe, you see. The usual effect is light-headedness and giggling. That is one effect, followed by drowsiness. The person feels sleepy. Then music becomes more enjoyable, food more exciting. Then after that, hallucinations are experienced. Sometimes pleasant, sometimes horrific. Yeah, you imagine, you see things, visions of things. Your system is affected, you see. So the hormones and the electrical brain signals all affected. So you might see an angel flying, or you might see ghosts, or you might see unpleasant, horrific visions. Often there is anxiety and distorted perception. The person cannot think clearly, has poor concentration, and is generally unable to cope with the everyday business of living. He's often sick and lethargic. So like an opium addict, he's useless as far as work is concerned. He's alive, he might be smiling, but you know, he just can't work. No energy to work, no strength, and just wanting a smoke. So there is no hangover afterwards as far as cannabis is concerned. A cannabis smoker does not become dependent physically as with heroin, but he is dependent psychologically on the hashish and on the cannabis, okay? And because of the state of his mind, because of what he experienced, you see? So it's not so much that physically he can't stand it if he doesn't take the drug, but it's more psychological because of what he has experienced, and he continues to want to have it, you see. Then there is lysergic acid diethylamide. long chemical name, short form LSD. LSD is made from the fungus of rye. In this part of the world, we hardly eat rye, but it sometimes you can buy rye biscuit, rye vita and so on. They are made from rye, if I'm not mistaken. Okay, so in this part of the world, we eat rice. Then we know of barley as well. We make barley cakes, make drinks of barley. See? Then we know of wheat. Wheat is from where we get our flour, wheat flour. See? So wheat and barley and rice, those are the grains we mostly use. But we hardly use millet, we hardly use rye. You go to other parts of the world, you have millet and you have rye quite commonly. And rye is closely related to barley and wheat. Yeah? And it is from a grass that's similar to wheat. The shape of it is similar, you know, like one stem coming out, one stalk coming out, and then the bits along the side, the grains. So the rye is harvested, and the rye, the fungus of the rye is used to produce this LSD. And LSD can be bought as liquid, or as pills, or in powder form. And they can be swallowed as in tablet form, or they can be put on sugar lump and sucked, or as a biscuit or in a drink. See? The effects include senses becoming mixed. See? You begin to be quite confused. New things are experienced, known as going on a trip. Yeah? And sometimes the experience is beautiful, sometimes terrifying. At times, there is the feeling of being able to fly. Yeah, so the person might just jump off the upstairs. If you are living in a double-story house, he's upstairs, he just jumped down, he thinks he can fly. You know? Or that nothing can cause any harm. And this may lead to fatal accidents, of course. Huh? The person may experience a second trip hours later, you know? Or even weeks later, and he can become very depressed and trouble with distressing feelings of unreality. Example, that he has to run away from fancied persecutors. So that type of imagination comes in, and then he wants to escape, he wants to run, he's hiding, frightened. Why? See, they are coming after me, they are coming, who are they? No, those people, those bad guys, see. Yeah. But actually it's all in their imagination. The person does not become physically dependent on the drug, just like this cannabis, but his life becomes radically altered because of the hallucinations. Then what about cocaine? Cocaine, a white powder made from leaves, is taken by sniffing or swallowed or made into a solution and injected. Effects include the person becoming excited, more energetic, feels good. There is the hazard of itching and strange sensation of the skin. This is a side effect of it. Okay? When injected directly into the bloodstream or inhaled, it has an extremely stimulating sensation. Then it is followed by depression. Physical dependence does not occur, but again, psychological dependence may be intense. Then opium or chandu. This is probably what most people are familiar with. Some of us have older relatives who are opium addicts. It's made from the latex of the opium poppy. In Southeast Asia, this is a very common drug. You heard of the golden triangle. Maybe they shouldn't call it a golden triangle, they call it black triangle or what, you see. It's a border between Myanmar, Thailand and Laos, you see, that area. And although the countries have their clear boundaries, but because it's mountainous area, difficult terrain, not easily accessible, what happened is that the tribes lived there, but there were also people, including those, you remember in China, in those days, the communists and the nationalists were fighting one another, and some of the nationalist army were left behind in various places. I've actually personally met some of these descendants of nationalist army in North Myanmar, in Michina. They could speak Guoyi, they still call it Guoyi, that means national language. Actually, what they mean is that they are the Chinese language. They were Chinese nationalist soldiers who, while fighting the communists, they have to shed their load, shed their number of people. Otherwise, they have difficulty supporting, giving enough food and running. So they leave the soldiers there and say, take care of yourself, we will come back for you. But the nationalists, you know the story, they were defeated by the communists, they fled to the island of Taiwan. And so they settled there, built up Taiwan, and they never kept the promise of coming back to rescue these left behind soldiers. So these people settled, and they also intermarry with the locals, the local natives, and along the way these people have guns, and they have connections outside, unlike the natives who was content just living in their mountain villages. But these people, because they have handphones, they have contact, you know, they are in touch with the world, see? So soon a network was formed, and soon they were cultivating these opium plants in the mountains. It is a plant known to the natives, and they know that this is the effect. And what you see in the sometimes National Geographic and other television channels, they show to you how the opium is produced. It's like you have seen those tulip flowers, something like the tulip bulb like that. But this is the opium bulb, is round at the top without a stalk. So it comes out with the leaves underneath, it comes out. So what happened is they use equipment, something like a piece of nail through a piece of wood. The wood is used as a handle. So they come and scrape the bulb, they scrape and scrape and scrape. So the sap will come out, you see. Then later on, as they will come and scrape away the sap. So this is the substance used to produce the opium. It is actually opium, you see. Then this bulb will continue to produce when they scratch more until they die, and then they will plant new ones. So the whole mountainside will be full of these poppy plants, you see. So of course they have their own private army, their own government, their life goes on like a separate country. See? So the different countries that share common borders, they claim that that's their land, but they haven't gone in, and it's controlled by this private government. They have their own king who is a general and of a secret private army, and they have their officers everywhere. They have lookouts. Say when government army come in, and then they will run or they will fight guerrilla warfare. So that area, Golden Triangle, is like a country of its own. So you don't simply go there. See. So some people have made arrangements to go in and along the way report of how things are run there and so on. So officially, the Golden Triangle is shared between these three countries, but it functions like a separate country run by this private government, private army. Yeah. So opium from there and elsewhere as well, of course, from India, it used to be from India, exported to China, but it's comes to different parts of Southeast Asia, affecting many people. Yeah? So it is sold as a brown sticky substance, smoked through a special pipe. That's, you know, typical, you see film show of opium addicts with that special pipe. It can be used to dull pain and induce sleep. That is the effect. So I remember one of my brothers, well, in our growing years, we have a biso, you know, a boil that was difficulty healing. So my father went next door to ask the old man for some apian sai, you know, the opium residue after as you smoke. Yeah? So the pipe becomes sticky, black and sticky all over. Those apian sai, they say the opium residue. So he just scraped some of the sticky stuff, come back and apply on the leg, because the bisul, the boil is causing the leg, was causing the leg to be very painful. So that reduces pain. So those were the village remedy for pain. And so it has that effect. And what happened is, after each dose, the addict feels high-spirited, everything looks bright, and then followed by drowsiness. And what happened is, it might lead to unconsciousness and sweating, if there's overdose. Then misery, remorse, despair then set in. Then the craving for the drug grows, there is loss of appetite, leading to the typical sallow face, emaciated or skinny figure of the opium smoker. Then the next drug is amphetamine, also known by the street name of Purple Hearts. This is a stimulant, sometimes called pep pills, once widely used medically as an antidepressant and also to suppress appetite in cases of obesity. In the old days it was used. The person feels buoyed up, confident, more cheerful. That heavy doses cause irritability, even violence. There is also the risk of mental illness, in which the person is beset with ideas of persecution, becomes restless and excited, and may hear imaginary voices. The regular taker is likely to be restless, over-talkative, over-excited and cheerful. This mood gives way to the sudden one of sullen, irritable depression. Immunity to the drug develops quickly, so much so that larger and larger doses are needed, and the drug taker can reach a state where he just aimlessly prowls around, just like an animal. See, this is a sad state or effect of this. Then there is barbiturates, which is a highly addictive drug. It's sometimes combined with amphetamines in so-called Purple Hearts, tablets called Purple Hearts. So one is widely used in medicine to help sleep and relieve anxiety. The regular user may become confused and very emotional. His speech is slurred, his walk is unsteady. Sudden withdrawal may cause anxiety, trembling, nausea, sleeplessness, and in extreme cases, convulsion and death. You know that generally that is the effect. The person doesn't behave normally. Now, another category needs to be mentioned. It's strictly not a drug, it's glue. But glue, because it has all the solvent in there, see? So glue sniffing is a form of addiction as well. The vapor from glue or other similar substance is inhaled, and after a few deep breaths, the person feels very cheery and exhilarated, and for up to 3/4 of an hour, there is slurred speech and disturbance of movements. Hallucination sometimes for a few hours or even days. In high enough concentrations, glue sniffing can cause severe brain damage and even death. See, because you know the solvent used in a glue, it vaporizes. Okay? So when you smell it, you don't want to get too near. But some people can't find drugs. They use that. They have glue sniffing. Glue sniffing is a special danger to children because it appears so innocent and the substances are so easily obtained. So just be aware, okay? Be aware. Now we come to the last section, the Christian response. And here we just want to note a few things. First, it is obvious that drug taking causes harm to the body. Apart from the harm from the drug itself, injections with dirty needles, and syringes cause local infections, it causes blood poisoning, it spreads hepatitis. Hepatitis of different types, you see. Then it spreads AIDS as well, see. There is also the great difficulty and pain involved in curing an addict. It's tough curing an addict. You really have to visit some of these drug addicts rehabilitation center, or you interact with some of those who are supposed to have been cured. Sometimes they relapse. See, terrible. So much time and effort spent. How many people have to help the addict to come and be cured, and then a relapse might occur because he goes back to mix with his old friends, or along the way, smelling what their friends are taking. They just trigger off their old craving. So for us, we would say no true Christian can ever consider drug taking. We are actually abusing our mind, body, and causing us to lose control of our senses, and therefore we are not living to the glory of God. And the Bible tells us that the body is the temple of the Holy Spirit, and the passage we have read at the beginning of our study, 2 Timothy chapter 1 verse 3 to verse 7, especially verse 7, we must understand that God has, if He has given us faith, He has given us gifts, then gifts are to be used to God's glory. And to use gifts well, you must be in control of yourself, your mind must be fed with truth, your heart must be convinced and convicted of truth, you must act according to the truth. But when your mind is controlled by drugs, your feelings are stirred up by drugs, how can you act according to the truth? See? So you are destroying yourself and your usefulness before God. So a Christian therefore cannot possibly consider drug taking and get addicted. You mustn't. Okay. But why do people turn to drugs? Some of the reasons that have been given, you can check it up, the surveys have been made. One is the craving for happiness. People are unhappy. Many people in the world, they look for happiness but they can't find it. Yeah? Then to escape from troubles, especially among adults. Family troubles, or especially family troubles. So financial troubles, constantly in need of funds, money, and you borrow and then creditors come after you. So then constant quarrels at home. So people want to escape all this by taking drugs. Then peer pressure and the desire to be accepted. So it comes from both ends. You interact with a certain group of people, they pressure you. They keep persuading you, it's good, you must try. You know, how you don't try, how do you know? Just once. And just once, next time, you say, and one more time, just one more time. And soon you don't have to be persuaded. Others, they want to be accepted. They join a certain group of people, they admire these people, they want to be in the in group. So they will just taste a little. The person might think that, you know, I will not go to extreme, not like these people, but in order to be accepted in a group, he will drink a little, take a little, and soon becomes addicted. Then escape from insecurity, disappointments, frustration among young people. Then fifthly, the pusher or peddler who make big money from the sale of drugs. They'll come to tell you, that it's good money, ask you to join them. And along the way, if you're not careful, make you one of the addicts and you are dependent on it. So you have your addict friends and you are selling the drugs for the peddler as well. Wow. So this multiplies. Hey, you say, how do you know all this? You know, I'm never a drug addict, okay? But you don't know the sort of background that some people are from, okay? So you see, then international syndicates engage drug mules to smuggle drugs across borders, resulting in many naive people being arrested. See, a few years back, there was a Malaysian lady who came to church for a short while. She had been released from prison not long in Peru. What? Peru? What has Malaysia got to do with Peru? Yeah. She just was befriended by some of these drug syndicate people, and she was told that they would pay for her airfare, go for a holiday, but along the way just pass this back to somebody. The attraction of having a free holiday to what? Peru? Oh, yes, go see what Pichu Pichu or whatever place and whatever, all the nice tourist places. So she went, and carried drugs in false compartments of the bags, and along the way she was arrested. She was put in prison. She pleaded innocent, she didn't know as well. But the law is the law. If you're caught with that much drug, that was the punishment. In this country it's worse, it's not death penalty if you carry beyond a certain amount of certain drugs. Yeah? So in that country of Peru, she was put into prison. And there an evangelical church has been ministering to these prisoners and drug addicts, so I mean drug pushers. So she was ministered to by a pastor from a church, and she heard the gospel, and then while in prison she professed faith. Then when she came back, she looked for a church, so that's how she came to us. But sad to say, not long after that, you see, a scam, which some of us also got it, she got drawn to by the scam. Or somebody claimed that he's friend of hers, he must have picked up the name of her friend somewhere along the line through the internet or emails or what, and claimed that he's stuck in Kota Kinabalu Airport, you see, and he just needs this money to have let the goods be released, and then he will be free to come over, you see. And she believed it, and wanted to, in a panic, say, you know, my friend. I said, how do you know this friend? Oh, he's actually, I don't know him, but he's a friend of my friend. I definitely know this other friend. But how do you know this friend is really the friend of your friend, you see? So she wasn't quite convinced. She was so convinced that that was a friend in need, and she wanted to quickly channel money to the person in Kota Kinabalu Airport, you see. Until I mentioned to her, have you forgotten that you haven't been released from prison not long? Well, that woke her up, you see. And I have to show her a phone message, similar message, you see. Trying to get money from people who are not careful, you see. So what happened to her after that, we don't know. She likely has gone to another church. But this story is told in order to show you again how close we are to individuals who innocently, kind-heartedly wanted to do this type of job and be attracted by the lucrative offer, you know, going on free holiday. Why not? You just carry this back to a friend somewhere, you know? And similarly, when you cross border, you know, immigration check-in, there might be a lady, you know, carrying so many bags, so heavy. Say, then you know, the face shows such anguish, you know, dealing with so many, and then in not looking in your face at first, you see. Then along the way, you know, you keep looking at her, but she's a good actor, you know, and finally dropping some things, and you go and pick up for her, you see. Then she will say, you know, can you please help me carry across the immigration? You see. So out of kindness, you were observing the person struggling, you see. You thought that she wasn't targeting you. Actually, she wasn't looking you in the eye, but she was targeting you. See? Then you fall for the trap. You help the person carry the bag over. And what if the bag contains drugs? Then you try to say, it's not mine, you know, and it belongs to her, you know, but the person will deny it. It's not mine. I don't know him. See? So you end up having to pay a heavy price for being kind to a person like that, you see. So all in all, we take note that we must be very careful. Parents must warn and educate their children, and the church has the opportunity of reaching out to the many who are in need. Just around us here, you know, there are drug addict centers. Christians can approve of medicinal use of drugs, but they cannot approve of recreational use of drugs. Drug taking is dehumanizing. It makes you unable to function as a proper human being, and it harms all the three faculties of the human personality. So it's not possible for us to support any law that claims to be the right of people to want to live that type of lifestyle. We say no, we can't approve of that. And finally, the last point, the gospel alone will meet the deep needs of those who turn to drugs. Romans 1:16, Mark 5:1-20. Drug addicts have been known to be cured by the power of Christ through the gospel. There are Christian organizations that specialize in curing and rehabilitating drug addicts. So in other parts of the world, you can check that up. There are many organizations. In Malaysia, we have some interaction with the Kenosis Home, the Burning Bush Drug Rehabilitation Center, and so also Lifeline Drug Rehabilitation Center. You see, some of their drug addicts who have been rehabilitated, they are or in the process of being rehabilitated. They are put under a regime where they are observed for some time, but they are usefully employed. So those who are helping them, they have various programs. So sometimes we have some odd jobs for them to do. So they charge us cheaply. They ask us to say, you know, roughly this is what we expect, but it's up to you to give more as donation. So sometimes if we want to clean up the garden or paint the wall, we can call upon them. See? And some of them are even quite expert. They have some drug addicts who were former workers, such as construction workers or tailors and so on. So they will teach the other drug addicts the skill, you see. So while being rehabilitated, whenever a job comes, they would send a team out. Then there would be a supervisor. Then they would say, tile the floor for you or repair the pipes for you and so on. So we have, our church has on and off once or twice used these people, partly to because it's a simple job and cheap and we don't have the time to do it, partly also to help them to have an outlet to earn some money and to help in the organization. Right? So this is just mentioned for your awareness, so that whenever you are faced with a situation where somebody needs help, needs advice, so you are aware that there are such organizations, Christian organizations, that help you. There are of course government organizations as well, but often they are organized in a big way and then sometimes a little bit too institutionalized, and it is like a prison like that. You go in there, it's like prison instead of a home, it's like a prison. You see, they have to do it that way, you know, army style, you know, and at night, you see, you have to be locked up and so on, and regimented. And then, of course, sad to say, in such institutions, often syndicates operate. It just takes one bad head among the security guards to allow the smuggling in of drugs to those drug addicts who are supposed to be rehabilitated. You don't want to be in such a situation, okay? You don't want to send a drug addict of a friend, of the son of a friend who is drug addict, you don't want him to be sent to a situation where this would happen. So you have to find out the background more carefully before you recommend or you send any drug addicts to such centers. So I would say the best bet is still sending to Christian, reliable Christian drug rehabilitation centers. That way they hear the gospel, they are usefully employed, and they follow through. Even after they stop drug taking, they follow through with them for some period of time until they are confident that he's now really clear of the drug addiction. Okay. So with this, we come to the end of tonight's study. There are some questions there you can look through. Question one, some countries impose the death penalty upon those who traffic in drugs. Does the punishment match the crime? How effective is the deterrent effect of such laws? Question two, suggest some ways the church might minister to drug addicts and those who are under rehabilitation. Question three, helping a stranger to carry luggage across the customs checkpoint is a definite no-no. But wouldn't we come across as unfriendly and unhelpful? Wouldn't we miss the opportunity to bear witness to him or her? So these are discussion questions which we put forward for you to consider if you have, you are inclined to do so. So are there questions or comments?